Well, welcome, everybody. Are you okay back there? Yeah. Oh, good to see you. Thank you for coming out. But it looks like it's turning out to be quite a beautiful day out there. It was gray and cold when I left home, and here it's all sunny and warm. The power of sitting, eh? Zazen zooming up into the atmosphere. Last weekend, as I think most of you know, we had a retreat, and during that retreat, I gave some talks on a fascicle or essay by Dogen titled Dotoku, Expressing the Way or Expression of the Way. And in many ways to translate Dotoku, but it all comes from his great collection of essays known as the Shobo Genzo, or Treasury of the True Dharma Eye. In this particular essay, Dogen encouraged us to practice the Buddha way and to give full expression to our inherent Buddha nature, our Dharma nature. In other words, to give full expression to ourself, our great self, the biggest, the big self. And as we discovered over the weekend, you know, Dogen's writings are challenging for a variety of reasons, some of which I talked about. I won't go into them here. So I thought it may be good for us to today kind of return to Dotoku, return to that work. And consider what it may mean for our daily lives, because I never really talked about that over the weekend. In other words, what does it mean for us to express our full nature? What does it mean for us to express the way, the Dharma? I was thinking about this. You know, I get such pleasure out of reading and struggling with Dogen's writings. Sometimes I look at the Japanese and then try to, you know, is it clearer actually in the Japanese than in the English? Very seldom. Very seldom. But at some point, I always ask myself, what do these ancient writings, because they were written in 1200s, right, in Japan, what do these ancient writings tell me about the human condition? And how do these words of a Japanese monk who lived, you know, in the 13th century, how do they inform my life now? So, in general, expressing yourself, expressing oneself, is usually understood as kind of, you know, showing your thoughts or your feelings. So I recently took a beginner's watercolor class. And as most of you know, I have practiced Japanese calligraphy for a number of years, decades now, I guess. And I thought I'd like to branch out. You know, usually Japanese calligraphy is all black and white. And I thought, color. I could play with color. And how hard can it be? So this class met, we met in person for 2 hours once a week for 8 weeks. And it was both fun. And as you can imagine, very frustrating. It's not easy. Painting a mountain scene in color requires quite different skills, I discovered, than doing Japanese calligraphy, black characters on white paper. And perhaps because I have been reflecting on Dotoku, kind of preparing for the last weekend's talks for a number of weeks, I realized at some point I was making this painting class into a project. I was making it into something to get good at. Evaluating each attempt as better or worse than the last. And it was kind of painful. Creating a watercolor on a surface seemed to fit in my idea of, like, well, I'm expressing myself. The great theme that Dogen wrote so beautifully about in that essay of Dotoku. But I soon realized that Dotoku, expressing the way, was not about my efforts to express myself in watercolor. Our lives are full of projects. Some minor, like getting the house neat for company. Some major, like redesigning or, you know, planting the garden. Some projects are necessary, but many are not. We make much of our life into a project. And as we practice, as we bring Zen practice into our daily life, I think it's really helpful to be aware of our habit to make everything into a project. So here are a few thoughts of what I mean by that, by a project. Project usually has a goal, an imagined place or result that lies somewhere in the future. The starting place of a project is usually the thought or feeling that something has gone wrong, or something is missing, or something new needs to be fulfilled. In other words, there's a sense of lack or wanting something, a desire arises. And having that, then we make a decision to act in some way. Okay, I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to clean up this mess. I'm going to learn how to paint a mountain scene. I'm going to, right? I have this goal. And you know, for example, you know, one day, maybe more than one day, we realize, well, we're kind of out of shape. Physically, right? No longer have the wind that we used to have when we were younger. No longer as strong or flexible. And the desire to change that arises after a bit then of looking around. Maybe we decide, okay, I'm going to join a yoga studio. Do a couple sessions a week. Sounds good, right? I think most of us would think or agree that the intention is good and doing yoga is good. Developing a stronger, more flexible body is good. However, as I was doing the watercolor class, I noticed another quality about projects. I was evaluating almost always what was useful and filtering out what was not. For example, the teacher would give a demonstration, oh, useful. That's how you hold the brush. And at times, she would talk about theory, which I didn't think was so useful. I don't remember much about what she said in that regard. And I realized that we are mostly conditioned to focus on our target and evaluate whether something will help us get to that imagined goal or not. And not that that's good or bad either, but just, oh, this is what happens. And another quality of a project is the constant judging and monitoring. Am I there yet? Am I getting better or not, improving or backsliding? Is this one better than the last one or worse than the last one? Following the schedule or routine, or skipping and slipping, approaching the goal or still a long way away. Over and over and over again, right? So it's, I want to be clear, you know, that having a project is not bad or something to be avoided necessarily. Because after all, every meal I cook has the qualities I just talked about. Dinner needs to be ready at 5:30. I focus on what's needed. I gather all the stuff together, chop, measure, stir, fry, and I judge what needs to be prepared first. what heat is appropriate for the onions versus the pumpkin seeds, and monitor the time to make sure all is ready at 5:30. Because Kate needs to go to choir, I need to go to my painting class. The trouble with project, though, as I'm using the term, is that the mind is focused on the goal, and the actions and things we use are simply seen as a means to get there. What projects are in your life? What projects you have ongoing in your life right now, this kind of focus on the goal and, you know, you just do what you can to get there, that's it. That's the main thing. How important are they to you? How much of your time and conscious thought do they take up? And is your life really made up of projects, one after the other, small and major? Is your life really simply a life of projects? And perhaps most importantly right now, is Zazen a project for you? I think for most of us, when we first come here to the Mountain Rain Zen community, Zazen does begin as a project. It's sparked, right? By desire to be calmer, be more focused, end a deep suffering perhaps, or find some meaning in life. And we come with this project. So practice often begins with the thought of getting out of here and reaching somehow over there. This movement through time, through another place. In the Buddhist tradition, the sources of suffering are called sometimes the three poisons of grasping or clinging, aversion, and ignorance. And often it's our experience of these three poisons, this grasping, aversion, and ignorance, that really does lead us to practice. We feel aversion to the present situation. I'm so unhappy right now. I'm so frustrated with this aspect of my life. And we kind of grasp for what we imagined a better state to be. We grasp for something in the future. And all of this begins to arise out of what in the Buddhist tradition is known as ignorance. That sense of me, I, being in control, to put it very briefly. I need to get out of here. I will do whatever I need to do to do it, and I will get there. And I'm in control, or I soon will be, in my life. But in Dotoku, in this wonderful essay by Dogen, Dogen challenges us to explore our assumptions of what is true expression. In the swirl of our many projects, we might assume that our self is being expressed. But Dogen writes, such expression, and in this case he means the expression of our truest self, the expression of our full Dharma. He writes, this true expression is not obtained by following others. Well, that makes sense. But then he writes something else. Nor by the power of oneself. Dogen reminds us that true expression, our kind of full expression of our life, is not what we glibly think of as expressing me, expressing myself. It is not self-centered, nor expressive in the conventional sense, but arising from one's own innate nature in a way that is almost unconscious or non-intentional. Rather than something you or I conceive of as self-expression, it flows from our inherent interbeing with all things, our interconnection with the world. So I'll explore that a little bit more in a moment here. It seems, you know, much of our time is spent wrestling with the bad self, the one that has all these nasty habits, trying to fix it or improve it or get rid of it. And while we may be thinking we have made progress, it really is just more selfing, creating a sense of self, which, when we do that, we become blind, or at least partially blind, to what the Buddhists called shunyata, the emptiness of all things. Shunyata, the key teaching of the Mahayana Buddhist tradition and of Zen, is that there is nothing that is unchanging, no permanent essence, there is no kind of little, what's the word, homunculus, a little something inside of Michael or Kate or Susu or somebody. No little creature that is separate from the rest of you, from the world. So as one witty Zen teacher said, we need to shift from selfing to universing. Realizing, opening to our vast nature. And I think, as we all know, no matter how long we have done Zazen practice or how little, the way that allows that shift to happen, to let go of little Mikey in here into something larger, is to let go of defending, judging, strengthening, or striving to perfect me. Suzuki Roshi, the Japanese monk who brought this kind of Zen practice to North America back in the 1960s, he said, or wrote, as he said really, in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, you find that Zazen meditation is the most perfect expression of your actual nature. Oh, who would have thought that, right? Sitting quietly, aware of your breath and body, not saying anything, not singing, not painting, not dancing, not on a stage, but Zazen meditation, the most perfect expression of your actual nature. In other words, Zazen practice is one way to kind of unhook from our projects. And of course, this doesn't all happen suddenly and at once. It takes time. But the consistent practice of returning to the present moment of body and breath, when we do that, the habitual pondering, evaluating, criticism of one's life and all its myriad projects that we are hooked into, all of that becomes a little less compulsive. In those moments of quiet stability, the world, though, becomes vividly alive. And we become aware, in those moments, of our almost constant disconnection because of our self-absorption. Many people have commented to me, you know, after a retreat, you go outside, and just the world just rushes up into your ears and eyes. Another Zen teacher, a contemporary Zen teacher, in Shohaku Okumura, in his book Realizing Genjo Koan. Also quite a scholar of Dogen, by the way, Shohaku Okamura. Anyway, he writes about our self-centeredness and Zazen practice, and he writes this. The act of truly seeing this self-centeredness is itself Buddha. When we really see our self-centeredness, he says, that itself is Buddha. To awaken to the reality of our delusion is itself Buddha. Zazen is not a method of correcting the distortion of our fabricated conceptual maps, but rather a way of letting go of all maps and sitting down on the ground of reality. I thought that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And a little bit later he writes, Zazen goes beyond and yet includes complete rejection and complete acceptance of thought. So it's really important here, I think. It's not saying, it's not like you become a blank here or you have reject everything. No. It's this paradox of holding both. Not getting hooked by the thought. But of course thoughts will be there. When we sit in the upright posture, keeping eyes open, breathing through the nose, and letting go of our constant thoughts, our mental formations, reality manifests itself. There is no way to conceive of being a Buddha or of being enlightened, yet without trying to be a Buddha and without trying to become awakened, in Zazen we keep settling more and more deeply into immeasurable reality. And I think this is what Dogen was pointing to in that earlier quote that I read. A true expression is not obtained by following others or by the power of oneself. We settle deeply into, as Shohaku writes, immeasurable reality. Well, easier said than done. Going back to Suzuki Roshi again, gives us some advice about an attitude for this kind of non-selfing Zazen practice that we do. Suzuki Roshi said, we should establish our practice where there is no practice. In other words, we stop trying to practice. We just do it. In other words, we let go of our Zazen project with a view of progress and result. Are we getting there? Was a good sit? 8 out of 10. Suzuki Roshi concludes that thought. As long as we practice Zazen in the area where there is practice and thought of enlightenment, there is no chance to make perfect peace for ourselves. Now, perhaps in your practice you already have a sense of this, even though it's really hard to articulate to oneself or to another. Okay, got that. But what about our daily life? In the quiet stillness of the Zendo, or the place where we meditate in our home, we may settle more and more deeply into immeasurable reality, to use Okamura's words. But what about the busyness of daily life? And what did our ancestors say about that? Well, here's a story, or a koan, or at least part of one. For us to consider. This is from our Chinese ancestors. Shui Feng was once tenzo, or head cook, at the monastery of Dongshan Liangjie. One day, Shui Feng was washing rice, and Master Dongshan asked him, Do you wash the sand away from the rice, or the rice away from the sand? Feixuang replied, I wash both sand and rice away at the same time. Well, Dongshan was one of the preeminent Zen teachers in the Tang Dynasty. And notice how Dongshan set up the question. Do you wash the sand away from the rice or the rice away from the sand? He set it up so that a simple answer which responds with either rice or sand would be lacking. He's demanding Feixuang to give full expression of the Dharma, full expression of himself as he is at this moment washing rice in the kitchen. And that's tricky. So, if you're the cook there, are you prizing rice over the sand, assuming the rice is what's really important, and the sand isn't? Well, I probably would if I was busy getting dinner ready, right? Got to get these bits of gravel out of the peas or whatever you do, right? So are we doing that? And yet, if we said, oh no, actually, the sand is pretty valuable too. So, but, kind of valuing the sand and neglecting the rice means there'll be no midday meal. So, of course, in this case, Xue Feng really knew his teacher. And he knew his teacher was asking about practice, mindfulness, awareness, not simply about washing the rice for the midday meal. In the busyness of washing the rice, what is fully expressed? Is Xue Feng planning the next task? Yeah, as soon as I get this rice, then I gotta, chop the daikon and get the miso soup going. Is Xue Feng silently grumbling to himself about how much more rice needs to be washed? These guys eat so much, I can't keep up. Is he fantasizing about the upcoming afternoon nap after lunch when he can take a break? Dongshan asks, what does it mean to wash rice right now? Tell me. Xue Feng replied, I wash both sand and rice away at the same time. When we are preparing a meal, rice is desirable, sand is not desirable. But in other circumstances, sand may be more desirable than rice. But clearly, Xue Feng did not make washing rice into a project. How's it doing? Am I getting it done? Okay, I got to move on to the next thing. Calling the rice good and the sand bad. Which, frankly, I probably would. Right? Do you ever have to sort lentils? Getting those little stones out? Are those stones good or bad? Xue Feng was engaged in the work and aware of the true nature of things. So this story does go on in some versions, but the gist is, how can we make rice useful? How can we make sand useful? Our practice of dotoku, fully expressing the Dharma, reveals the beauty and true nature of rice and the beauty and true nature of sand. While engaged in our work, the practice is to enter fully into the activity and see the quality of each and everything. And as we work, we study the nature of what is before us, allowing its full nature to come forward. The cook studies the nature of each ingredient, The gardener studies the nature of each vegetable, flower, tree in the garden. In our Zazen practice, we come to see the oneness with everything. In our work, we reveal that oneness through seeing deeply into the uniqueness of everything. Rice is not sand, and sand is not rice. Half of our practice is seeing interconnectedness. The other half is fully giving life to each thing. In this way, we express the Dharma. In this way, we express our full nature. What do you think Shuifeng did with the sand once he had separated it from the rice? He probably took it out into the garden. There'd be some water there, and he would carefully empty it out. It is in fully giving life to each thing that we give full expression to our life. Last weekend in the Dharma talks, I mentioned another Japanese Zen teacher, Daien Katagiri, who also brought practice, came to North America not long after Suzuki Roshi, and brought this form of practice. He set up the Minnesota Zen Center. Anyway, there are two of his books that titles, I thought, summed up this practice of Dotoku. The first book is Returning to Silence, right? Emphasizing the importance of returning to our natural awakened nature. And we do that through the silence of our Zazen practice. A second book of selections from his talks is titled You Have to Say Something. And it's focused on how to bring that awakened nature to bear in our everyday life. So here are a few words from You Have to Say Something. Sometimes I have thought, the mischievous part of me has thought, when someone comes in for Doksan, into a meeting with me, and sit down and say, well, I don't have anything to say. I just thought I'd come. I just have anything to say. I thought, well, you have to say something. So here's what Katagiri Roshi wrote. You have to return home and sit in peace and harmony. This means placing the tree just where it ought to be to express its life as a tree. Placing the cup where just it ought to be to express its life as a cup. Placing the fork just where it ought to be to express its life as a fork. If you leave the fork on the floor, you kill the life of the fork. As chief cook, you have to deal with forks, vegetables, pans, and so on, placing them where they ought to be. The best way to take care of your objects is for you, the subject, to just merge with them. When you extend your life to them, you give them the chance to extend their lives to you. In this magnanimous space is Buddha's world. With your ordinary understanding, everything remains apart from you, and the things around you don't speak to you. So it doesn't seem to matter what you do with the things around you. But when things are placed where they ought to be, that is, if you allow them to be what they are, they very naturally start to talk to you. You feel at home in the wonderful space you have allowed to happen around you. So, how should I approach painting with watercolors? Well, my Zazen practice helps familiarize me with my habitual criticisms, excitements, and strong emotions, so I'm not quite so pushed and pulled by them as I used to be. Not quite. And with Zazen, the grip of the self, this kind of self-focused, is loosened some. And with that, I think, comes the possibility of just painting wholeheartedly. In the Tenzo Kyokan, Instructions to the Cook, another essay by Dogen, Dogen talks about three minds that a cook should always maintain. And I think a painter, a poet, a dancer, an artist, a gardener, should also maintain a joyful mind, an elder's mind or a grandparent mind, and a magnanimous mind. A joyful mind, Dogen writes, is a mind of ease and happiness, delight in what the world offers. An elder's mind or grandparent mind is the caring concern of a parent or grandparent for all things. And the magnanimous mind is like a mountain, stable and impartial. It is like the ocean, tolerant and viewing everything from the broadest perspective. Those are the three minds that Dogen writes about. And these seem like good qualities to cultivate as I approach my next effort at watercolor painting. Good qualities, I think, for all of us to express the fullness of our true nature. Whether we are washing dishes, cooking a meal, changing diapers, so I'll end with the words of yet one more Zen teacher, Norman Fisher, the founding teacher of Mountain Rain Zen Community. And this is from his book, and Norman's quite a poet, right? I think as almost everyone here knows, well, very well-published poet. In his book, Experience, Thinking, Writing, Language, and Religion. It's kind of a tome, actually. Anyway, he writes this. Somewhere we've developed the misconception that poetry is self-expression and that meditation is going inward. Actually, poetry has nothing to do with self-expression. It is a way to be free, finally, of self-expression, to go much deeper than that. And meditation is not a form of thought or reflection. It is a looking at or an awareness of what is there, equally inside and outside. And then it doesn't make sense anymore to talk about inside or outside. So many things to be said about self-expression, to express. So many things to be afraid of, to express ourselves. But maybe the problem It's simply we don't really understand yet quite what it means. And maybe Dogen and our meditation practice can help us truly get to expressing the full life that we have been given. And as Suzuki Roshi writes, the fullest expression is honor Krishna, being aware. But don't let that stop you from blowing your trumpet, hitting those piano keys, writing poetry, even watercolor. But as we do this, let us remember a joyful mind, the deep caring of grandparent mind, and the vast boundlessness of magnanimous mind. And give ourselves to the world. Thank you.